Whenever we were playing our defensive zone, I ended up covering Graham. I was still in the flow, still skating like the Stanley Cup was on the line. Because if this team was going to end up hating me, it wouldn't be because I didn't make an effort. And Graham, to my surprise, played like a skittish granny. He coughed up the puck to me so many times that it almost got boring. "Focus, Graham!" Coach yelled more than once. Ouch. After practice, I volunteered to move the nets out of the way for the Zamboni. I stacked cones and generally made myself scarce for a little while. By the time I made it back into the locker room, there weren't very many people left. Facing my locker area, I hung up my pads until it was a safe bet that everyone was dressed. Then I headed to the showers alone. When I came out, only Bella and Hartley were still around. Their two heads were bent over what looked like a glossy hockey program. Bella made marks on it with a black Sharpie. "Ricker," she said as I tried to drag my boxers over damp skin. "We need your bio info by Tuesday. Schools and teams, height, weight, you know the drill."
"Roger that," I said, hopping into my jeans.
Bella stuffed her paperwork into a bright pink backpack. "Let's go eat Coach's barbecue." I hesitated, yanking my socks onto my feet. I wasn't going to go.
"Oh, no, you don't,"
Bella said, handing me my shirt.
"That's not the message you want to send."
"I don't want to send any message at all," I said from inside my polo. When I could see Bella and Hartley again, they were both staring down at me. "Seriously, I'm going to be everyone's gossip nugget tonight. Why shouldn't I sit this one out?" Bella looped her arm in mine and yanked me off the bench.
"You're coming."
Crap. "Should we bring anything?"
"Nope,"
Hartley said.
"Just your pretty face,"
Bella added. "Not helping," I said, while Hartley snickered. 20 minutes later, we were standing in Coach's generous backyard. I thought it would just be the team, every one of them avoiding me. Luckily, the girlfriends had been invited to Coach's shindig. With girls there, the conversation was lubricated with summer exploits and other gossip.
"Can you get this?"
Bella handed me a bottle of wine, the cork halfway out.
"I thought I had it."
I set my much-needed beer down on the table to do her bidding. Tightening my grip on the corkscrew, I levered it out slowly, trying not to break the cork. That done, I wrapped my hand around my beer bottle again.
"Thanks. Coach's wife asked me to bring her a glass of white wine. Do you think she meant the Chardonnay or the Pinot Blanc?"
"Sorry, Bella, but I'm not that kind of gay friend. I wouldn't know a Pinot Blanc if it bit me in the ass." One of the goalies, a big dude named Orson, choked on his beer when I said it. For a second, I assumed that he couldn't believe that I'd said the word gay out loud. But when he tapped his bottle to mine, I realized that he was only laughing at my joke. Bella gave us both an eye roll.
"So if I want help picking out shoes, I shouldn't come to you?"
"You can try," I said. "But my MO is just to choose whichever pair stinks the least."
"Who says that's not an improvement? Some of these guys can't manage that."
Bella picked up a glass of white wine and headed for the house.
"You love us anyway,"
Orson yelled after her. She gave us the finger behind her back, and we both laughed this time. And now I knew then that Orson would put up with me. One down, 24 to go.
Graham. At Coach's barbecue, I choked down a couple of pulled pork sandwiches and wondered how soon I could leave. But Coach hadn't made his beginning of the year speech yet, and I'd played so badly this afternoon that I didn't want to draw any more attention to myself. Pale ale number 3 wasn't enough to soothe my nerves. Beer just couldn't make big enough payments on my overdue buzz bill. Coach was a Scotch man, so I wandered into the house to see what he might be pouring. I found Coach in his study with a handful of guys watching hockey footage on a big screen.
"Graham," he called, "I've got a video of last year's Brown game. Watch this defensive play."
But the video wasn't what I was after. "What you got there?" I asked one of the new kids, the one we were calling Frenchie. He squinted at me apologetically, probably trying to decide if the word for whiskey was the same in English as it was in French. Instead of attempting to solve the mystery, he handed me the glass, and I took a taste.
"Nice. I'll pour you one," Coach said, his eyes still on the screen. "Maybe we'll put some hair on your chest, Graham. Today you could have used it."
My shit was not together. I agreed with him under my breath. He put a glass in my hand.
"Figure it out, kid. We have a chance to do great things."
And Coach left the room. When he was gone, I drank the scotch in 2 gulps. Big D picked up the decanter and topped up his glass and then mine.
Figure it out, kid, he said, mimicking Coach. But after practice, be careful not to drop the soap in the showers.
Another defenseman began to laugh, and then the Canadian kids joined in, the way people do when they're not sure if they understood the joke. With Big D right there in my face, I forced a smile, and I took another deep drink. This time, the alcohol burned all the way down. Coach's speech always came before dessert, so when I saw the cupcakes coming out of the kitchen and heard the telltale ding-ding-ding of a spoon on a glass, I made my way to the front lawn.
Tonight, Coach said, scotch glass in hand, I want to read to you my favorite quote of President Teddy Roosevelt's. Maybe you've heard it before in a history class or philosophy, but it could have been written for hockey players. We're going to go far this year, and along the way, people are going to try to tell us that a little Ivy League school can't play hockey at the national level. But that's bullshit.
We cheered, of course. We always did. On other nights like this one, I'd breathed in every word Coach said. The last two seasons, I'd stood here taking in his wisdom as gospel. But tonight, I felt as though I stood on the edges of my life, looking in. That's what a week-long anxiety attack will do to a person.
Listen up, Coach squinted at his notes. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better.
Coach smiled at us.
Credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, and who, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat.
There was more cheering then, and Hardly put two fingers up to his lips and whistled.
Now, boys, Coach continued, I don't love failure. I fucking hate it. But what Teddy meant was you have to embrace the fact that failure exists, or you will never find greatness. The man wrote a long fucking sentence which really means go big or go home.
At that, he raised his glass again, and we all drank whatever we had. My stomach rolled with discomfort. Again, because I wasn't feeling the love. Every shitty thing I'd ever done in my life had just caught up to me. Check, please. It was time for me to sneak out. First, I headed toward the bathroom to take a leak before walking home. As I wove through the house, I got a little distracted by an oblique glimpse of Bella in the study. She was standing in front of Frenchie, her hands on his chest. She was rubbing him gently and talking a mile a minute, and he was gaping at her like she was a vision from heaven. Good God, she was working him over. The kid wouldn't know what hit him. Lost in a half a smirk, I didn't look where I was going, which is the only way I could have ended up shoulder-checking Johnny Ricker as he came out of the bathroom. Jesus, he swore, grabbing the doorframe to keep his balance. The word sorry got trapped in my throat as I realized who it was, and I leapt back, away from his body, but not before the shock of getting so close to him sunk in. The face I'd been ducking all week frowned up at me. I was taller than he was, I realized. When we were 15, we'd been the same height. It had made kissing him really easy. No doubt the look on my face now was one of total horror, since that had been my default expression since the moment he'd walked into the locker room a week ago. He studied me for a second, his expression darkening. A hand rose to rub his pectoral where I'd slammed into him the moment before. Then he seemed to pull himself together, lifting an eyebrow tauntingly. Was that good for you? I only stood there mute and choking on my own stupidity. A second later, he dropped his gaze and passed me, heading for the front of the house. I watched him go because I could not look away.
4. Shadow. October. Shadow. Covering an opponent closely, limiting his effectiveness. Ricker. I walked to the hockey weight room through a fine autumn afternoon, admiring the decorative old architecture. After 4 weeks, I'd learned the campus pretty well, and figured out a lot of that new guy stuff that you have to learn. The dining halls had Pepsi products, The graduate school libraries were open later than the undergrad ones. You didn't need quarters for the laundry because they took credit cards. Also, I tried not to get depressed about always being the new guy. People passed me in twos and threes, chatting together. The transfer student is an awkward thing to be. Friendships have already formed, allegiances made. I was going to be separate for a while, an outsider. I was already used to it. At the gym, I got busy sharing a squat rack with Trevi. He was another forward with curly dark hair and a nice smile, though he was obviously as straight as a ruler. I put Trevi at a solid 6 on the Ricker scale. That was my private rating for how tolerant my teammates were of me. Trevi had earned his 6 by always looking me in the eye and acting friendly enough when we found ourselves standing next to one another at Capri's or using the same piece of weight room equipment. But he'd never started a conversation with me, not once. It was as if volunteering anything about himself would be taking it too far, as if the other dudes might start to wonder, you know? That was life in the locker room. "You're up," Trevi said, stepping aside to stretch. I maneuvered myself beneath the barbell and hoisted it onto my shoulders. Then I took a good step backward, stuck out my ass, and squatted. The first 3 reps were okay, but numbers 4 and 5 nearly killed me. When I'd finally parked the barbell back onto its holders and turned around, Trevi was massaging his own shoulder with one hand. He'd done that a lot this afternoon. "That bothering you?" I asked him. "It's just a big knot," he shrugged. "But it's going on 2 days now, stubborn bitch." "Huh." I looked around the weight room. "Do you know if they have any tennis balls around here? I know a trick." "Yeah? Hang on. It's getting to the point where I'll try anything." I stretched my quads until he came back with a hard rubber ball. "Will this work?" "Sure." I took it from him. "Now sit down on that bench." That's when I saw the slightest hesitation. Maybe Trevi didn't realize that I'd actually have to touch his shoulder, and now he wondered whether it was worth it. "It won't make you queer," I joked. His expression turned sheepish, and he sat down on the bench. The best thing to do would be to probe his shoulder with my fingers, looking for the knot, but I knew he'd be happier if I kept my hands off him. "Point to the spot," I said. He reached 2 fingers back, digging them into the muscle. "Okay," I said, putting the tennis ball there. When he took his hand away, I began to press. "Right there?" I asked, putting some weight behind the ball. "Yeah, a little higher." I adjusted the ball a fraction of a centimeter and put even more weight behind it. "Christ," he grunted. "I know, but it works. In fact, it will still work even if you cry like a little girl right now." He chuffed out a laugh. "Drop your head and just try to relax. It takes a couple of minutes for your muscle to stop fighting back." "'Kay," he said. Pressing the ball into his muscle, I glanced around the busy room. Hartley and Orson were doing split squats against the windows. Those were the 2 players who rated highest on the Ricker scale. Orson was a solid 8, and I always found him easy to talk to. And Hartley was a 9. That dude worked to include me, and never even seemed to notice he was doing it. In fact, he could earn himself a 10. I was saving room on the Ricker scale. Maybe I'm a tough grader, but I hoped that the unlikely day would come when somebody actually told me that they were glad I showed up to play hockey here. After those 2, there were a couple of 7s and a handful of 6s like Trevi. Graham was in the opposite corner, his big legs visible on either side of his press bench. He was a 0 on the Ricker scale. I'd been at Harkness a month and he still hadn't looked me in the eye except by accident. His avoidance both weirded me out and made me angry. Unfortunately, I hadn't handled it well. Instead of ignoring him, I'd begun trying to provoke him just to get a reaction, any reaction. It started the day he'd crashed into me at Coach's house. I don't even know why I'd thrown down that ridiculous comment. "Was that good for you? Cheesy much?" But even though I'd said something patently ridiculous, he reacted as if I'd threatened his life. He went pale and shrunk back. I wasn't proud of it, but I'd tortured him a few other times, too. He just made it so damn easy. Last week, we'd come face to face in the hallway here at the rink. There was nobody else around. I didn't say anything. I only blew him a kiss. And I got the same horrified expression all over again. Lately, he'd been circling the perimeter of the dressing room just to avoid me. But I was always aware of him. When he walked into a room, I felt him, like a change in the air pressure. Just an oblique glimpse of him was all it took to put me on high alert. I didn't want to be so sensitive to him. It's just that I didn't know how to stop. We'd been so close all those years ago, my subconscious just couldn't get over the idea that we weren't anymore. His laugh was the hardest thing to bear. If he were across the room talking to Bella or a couple of buddies, sometimes I would hear him laugh, and the low sound of his quiet chuckle always crushed me. I used to love to make him laugh, and I didn't know how to quit listening for it. "Wow," Trevi said, turning his head. "That's trippy." "What?" I asked, shaking off my reverie. "Did you feel it release?" I eased up on the tennis ball that I'd forgotten I was holding. I chanced putting my fist against his body instead, probing for a knot. But I didn't find one. "Yeah, damn." He rolled his shoulder a couple of times. "It's so much better. Awesome." He stood up and turned around. "Thanks." "Sure thing." I handed him the ball. "If the knot comes back, you can try it by yourself, trapping the ball between you and the wall. But it's hard to get the angle just right." He held up his hand for a high five, and I met it. "Thanks, man. Seriously. I'm gonna hit the treadmills. You coming?" "Sure." Maybe Trevi would graduate from a 6 to a 7 on the Richter scale. As they said of football, mine was a war that would be won by inches. I followed him into the cardio room where I wouldn't have to look at Graham.
Graham. "Yo, Graham, aren't you going to spot me?" "Sure, of course." I hopped over to stand behind Smitty's head, bracing my hands underneath the barbell. God, I've been zoning out. Again. "So what do you think of our defensive lineup?" Smitty asked, just before hefting the bar off the rack. He was a sophomore blue liner, a defenseman like me. What did I think? I only wished I could think. My head was a frickin' mess. I hadn't slept a full night since Ricker had sauntered into the locker room. Bella had begun showing up in my room first thing in the morning, rolling me out of bed and looking for empty bottles. It didn't stop me from drinking, but it did make me better at hiding the evidence. I said to Smitty, because lately nothing came out of my mouth right on the first try. "I think we're pretty solid. The French kids work well together. I'll bet Coach puts them on the same line." Beneath me, Smitty grunted in agreement. For the next 90 seconds, I focused all my attention on the barbell in my hands, and on my teammate's straining face below me. I could at least do that, right? I could pay attention long enough to avoid killing Smitty with my negligence. After 6 reps, Smitty's shaking arms set the bar back onto the rack, and it was my turn again. I sat back down on the bench. As I lay back, I caught a glimpse of Ricker joking with Trevi. He never smiled like that when he looked at me. And why would he? Ricker's anger at me was a physical, tangible thing. Every time he leveled me with a glance, my brain short-circuited. And the more often I saw him, the stupider I acted. Obviously, talking to him was the only possible solution, and it's not like I never considered the idea. I give it lots of consideration every night from about midnight until 2 a.m. But how do you start that conversation? "I'm sorry you took a beating for me, and I'm sorry I was too afraid to ever speak to you again." It would be impossible to explain it, because no plausible explanation existed. Fear wasn't a good enough reason to do what I'd done. The only thing that seemed to help me sleep even a little was Scotch whiskey. And thank God for that. When I was barely 16 and going through hell after our incident in the alleyway, I didn't even have alcohol to soften the blow. After Ricker disappeared from my high school and my life, it took me a long time to process what had happened. Before that awful day, naivete had made me far too content. I'd never realized just how dangerous it was to be with Ricker. I knew we could never tell anyone. I went without saying. But I'd never been forced to witness what would happen if people knew. I hadn't understood the sheer repulsion that I'd somehow earned by loving another boy. It was the look of disgust on our attackers' faces that did me in. "Sick fags," they'd said. Sick. I was sick. The word vibrated through my chest for months. I'd been so confused. But I knew one thing. I didn't ever want to see that same look on the faces of my family. If there was something sick about me, I hoped I could stomp it out before anyone else saw it. After Ricker left, his parents told everyone at church that he'd gone to stay with his grandmother for a while. Me? I spent a couple months cowering in my bedroom.
Sometimes I tried to find answers on the internet. And we all know where that leads, right? I googled same-sex experimentation and found plenty of articles. For a hot second, they made me feel better. I read that straight teens often experimented with their friends because that's who was available and willing. Basically, teen guys touch each other's junk sometimes or jerk off together. Then most of them grow up to happily fuck women, eventually getting married and having cute little kids. Good on me, right? Not so fast. None of these accounts said anything about straight guys who'd basically tried to superglue their mouths to their best friends whenever nobody was looking. There weren't any stories by guys who wanted nothing more than to feel their best friend's body blanketing their own, or who could light up just from the sight of his smile from across the room. What Ricker and I were to each other was so far past the notion of casual experimentation that it wasn't even funny. And it didn't matter that we'd never had sex, or even gotten up the courage to blow each other. The more I read, the better I understood that this was one of those times when the spirit of the law meant more than the letter of the law. I stopped Googling things after that. The basement was off limits to me, too. It was too hard to be down there and not think of him. Just walking past that couch gave me a sick feeling. I craved him still, and I hated myself for it. I brought the video game console up into my bedroom, only it wasn't any fun to play without him. Then, a few months after Ricker left, hockey season came around again. I tried out for the high school varsity team and made it. Still, every time I laced up my skates, I thought of him. I wondered where he was, and whether he was playing hockey on some team in Vermont. In an attempt to flush Ricker out of my head, I started dating girls, and that went well for me. A lot of the other sophomore guys were too shy. They liked girls a lot, but there was too much at stake, so they were afraid to ask them out. Or they acted like morons when they got their big chance. But I was fearless. Getting shot down by a girl wasn't even in the top 50 on the list of things that scared me. So I asked the prettiest girl in my class to the homecoming dance. And that went so well that I asked another one of the movies the following week. Dating girls? It was as easy as shooting fish in a barrel, as my dad liked to say. But I still missed Ricker like crazy. Which was stupid, because even after I blew my chance to visit him in the hospital, he was always just a phone call away. It's just that I couldn't afford that phone call. The price was too high. Not only was I afraid to face him after I'd been such a coward in that alley, I was afraid to tell him how I really felt. It was too fucking dangerous to be friends anymore. Because he made me want things that were sick. 5 years is a long time. Eventually, hockey stopped reminding me of Ricker. I kept at it even as the game changed. Varsity hockey, and then college hockey, was a bigger, more physical game than we'd played together in the Bantam League. Hockey was the place I went to get out all the anger. Slamming my opponents into the boards? Nobody ever called that sick. When I did it right, the crowd stood up and cheered. The world is cracked. It really is. And now I was cracking, too. Because Ricker had walked back into my life, and he did it by telling the whole frickin' team that he was gay. It was the single ballsiest thing I'd ever seen a guy do. Ricker's appearance at Harkness was like my own personal horror film come to life. I was afraid of what he'd reveal about me. I was afraid of what he might say to my face. I was pants-shitting scared all the time. I was afraid for Ricker, too. He didn't seem to understand the risks. I'd stared hatred in the face, and I was never going to forget the look of its snarl. Over the last 5 years, I built and polished a set of personal deflector shields that I engaged every time I spoke to a really attractive man. I was careful not to stare, and I knew how to affect the kind of body language that conveyed only polite interest. But Ricker was hell on my deflector shields. When he was around, nothing worked right. My eyes went where they weren't supposed to go, and I felt the thrum of expectation just from breathing the same air that he did. Even now, I tried not to keep tabs on him as he crossed the room with Trevi. It turns out that trying to ignore somebody is about the most distracting, exhausting thing in the world. Whenever Ricker walked into a room, I felt like I'd been stripped of all my skin. "Are you up for one more set of bench press?" Smitty asked me. "Sure," I said automatically. Hell, I was up for 10 more sets. Maybe I could finally get tired enough to sleep all the way through the night. Yeah, not likely.
5. Pinching. November. Pinching, when a defenseman leaves his typical rearward position to to push forward into the offensive zone. Ricker. We were on a bus heading to Boston when I got a text from Skippy, my ex-boyfriend. For a couple of minutes, I ignored it. There were rules I'd made for myself with regard to him. The first rule was, never text Skippy first, because that was just pathetic. The second rule was, always wait a half hour before responding. But I was on a bus, just staring out at the highway, so of course I peeked. He'd sent me a photograph, one that made me say, "Ah," and immediately compose a reply. "Who are you texting?" Bella asked from the seat beside me. "My ex," I said, hitting the send button. "Ooh," she said. "Can I see a picture?" "Of my ex? No, I deleted them all. Off my phone, anyway. As any self-respecting human being would. But you can see a picture of his new dog." I handed her the phone. "Aw," she echoed. I tried to take the phone back, but she moved it out of my reach, still staring at the poodle in the photo. "Why is the dog wearing glasses?" "I don't know. In fact, I just asked that question a second ago. Not that I expect a reasonable answer." Skippy was kind of a nut. "You know, Ricker," she trailed off, still squinting at the photo, "I'd kill any guy who ever said this to me, but this dog and I kind of look alike." "What?" I grabbed the phone back and looked again at the picture, and then I let out the sort of laugh that hurts a little because you tried and failed to hold it in. "God, Bella, you're right." The dog had curly hair and a color much like hers and a goofy smile. "Okay, let's take your picture and send it to my ex." "Wait." She held up a hand, and I thought she'd shoot the idea down, but she turned around in her seat instead. "Hey, Trevi, can I borrow your reading glasses just for a minute?" Again, I snorted. Bella was just about the best sport in the entire world, and I told her so when she came back wearing glasses that were startlingly similar to the ones the poodle wore in the photo. My phone buzzed with a text, answering the question of why the dog wore glasses. "Ricky, not everyone has perfect vision. Don't make her feel self-conscious. We don't have a name yet. Ross wants to call her Cujo, but I refuse. Ideas?" "What a goof," Bella said, reading over my shoulder.
"Yep.
Who's Ross?"
"My replacement."
She made a face.
"Sorry. Let me see the poodle one more time so we can get this just right."
I showed Bella the photo again, and she adjusted the barrette in her hair to make it poof up like the dog's.
"Let her rip," Bella said, smiling.
I switched my phone to the camera setting and framed the shot. "Hang on." I reached up to gently tilt her chin to the side like the poodle's. "Okay, can you make your smile a little doggier?" But that made Bella laugh, which made me laugh, so we had to take a minute to calm down.
"What is so amusing?" asked Frenchie from across the aisle.
"Nothing," Bella giggled, and I lost it again. Several people were turning to stare now. We were like the loud, raucous table at a restaurant, annoying unless it's you.
"Okay," I took a deep breath. "We can do this. Let's see your pose again."
She made her doggiest smile yet, and I clicked the shutter button. For a caption, I wrote, "Dear Skippy, your new dog and my new friend, separated at birth?" "Hit send," Bella giggled. I did, and it only took about 60 seconds to get the first response. "Oh my God." Of course, that made us howl. Then he wrote, "I can't even. What is her name?" "Bella," I replied, and my phone rang almost immediately. "Hello?" I chuckled into the receiver.
"Ricky, let me talk to Bella."
Figures. I passed her the phone. She took it with laughing eyes.
"This is Bella. Nice to meet you, Skippy."
There was a pause.
"I'd be honored if you named her Bella. Seriously. You're welcome."
She handed the phone back.
"He wants to talk to you."
"What's up, Skipster?" I asked, dropping my voice. "I'm glad you made a friend, Ricky." Just what I needed, a little patronizing from the ex. The ex who seemed to be doing much better than I was. Thanks. Can't be easy being the new guy for 3 years in a row. I sighed, because it was true.
"I'll live. Always do."
"Of course you will. Where are you, anyway?"
"On a bus to Boston for a tournament."
"That doesn't sound bad. A bus full of big, muscular athletes."
"It has its moments."
"Glad to hear it. Take care, Ricky. Ross sends his love."
"Seriously?"
Thanks. Bye, Skip."
I hung up with him to catch Bella watching me.
He seems fun. Do you miss him?
Sometimes. That was the truth, and Skippy was fun. Yet I'd somehow decided about a year ago that he and I had outgrown each other. I even told him so, which he did not appreciate. Then, when he made it official by dumping me, I was less sure. Ugh. Next topic, please. I stashed my phone and took out the book that I was supposed to be reading for English class. After Bella returned Trevi's glasses to him, she pulled a folder out of her backpack. "Now that you've been with us for 2 months," she said, setting her backpack at her feet, "you've had time to decide who's the most attractive man on the team."
"Nice try, babe," I said, looking out at Highway 95, which was currently flying by the window of our bus.
"Seriously, Ricker, how can you be my gay BFF if we can't dish about guys?"
She clicked a ballpoint pen and began to write numbers down the left side of a legal pad, from 1 to 12.
"No can do. I'm not getting my ass kicked just to fulfill your Hollywood fantasies."
In my duffel, I'd hidden a big bar of dark chocolate with bits of salted caramel in it. Bella could joke as often as she wanted, but my true role as gay BFF was to keep her supplied with fine chocolate. It worked for both of us.
"I'm only half kidding," she whispered. "For the past 2 years, I've made a close study of who has the nicest ass on the bus. It's difficult for a girl to keep that kind of thing to herself."
"You don't keep it to yourself," I pointed out. "Not a day goes by when you don't tell each ass's owner just what you think of it."
"Not true," she countered. "I'm very liberal with my praise. A good manager knows to motivate the troops."
I snorted. Bella's School of Management was a peculiar institution, but it was our peculiar institution.
"The best ass is on Hartley," she said in the barest whisper, "and that's why it's such a buzzkill that he's my biggest failure."
Now she had my attention. "Never tapped that one?" As much as I wanted to avoid the subject of Hartley's very fine ass, the lure of hearing just a little more about the inner workings of Bella's mind was just too great.
"Why not?"
"Timing. Last year, when he dumped his old girlfriend, he got together with Corey the next morning." She shook her head, looking at once disbelieving and brokenhearted.
"And I love Corey to death, so I can't even wish for them to break up."
"That's big of you." I'd met Corey too, and she was the bomb. Bella grinned.
"It is big of me. I'd never sleep with anyone who was attached. Pepe, for instance, has a girl back in Montreal. There are like 50 pictures of her in his room."
I wondered how she knew that, but I thought I'd just let that question slide.
"So, any given season, a lot of the team is out of rotation for me. That's why Graham and I hooked up so often last year. He's always single."
I kept the flinch off my face, but it wasn't easy. The glimpses I'd gotten of his antics with women always gave me a surprise stab of, I don't even know what. At Caprice, girls hung on Graham with as much frequency as they did the other players. A couple of times I'd seen him make hasty, drunken exits in the company of whichever puck bunny had followed us to Caprice from the rink. And I already knew that he and Bella were close. They were awfully touchy-feely with one another. Then again, Bella touched everyone until they asked her to stop, so I hadn't made any mental pictures of Bella and Graham naked together. For some reason, I didn't like imagining it. If I were a better person, I'd be happy for him, I guess. But apparently, I was the sort to hold a grudge.
"Not your business," I reminded myself.
It was time to think about something else, like the saucer shot I'd sunk into the corner of the net last week, scoring Harkness's first goal of the year in our preseason scrimmage against Brown. That would have to be my happy thought. It's not like I would be getting naked with anyone anytime soon. Hockey took up half my time, and that was only going to get worse. School took up the other half. Besides myself, I couldn't even name a gay man at Harkness. I had no real social life. When the team went to Caprice for pizza and beer, I usually made an appearance. I'd have a slice or two and a pint, and talk hockey with the guys who made me feel welcome. I usually left early, quitting while I was ahead. Wasn't exactly healthy, the way I still felt like I was apologizing for myself half the time. But there was no roadmap for being me. I was operating under the vague assumption that if I played really great hockey this season, things would just get easier. My teammates might accept me as a true friend rather than that gay guy who can make tape-to-tape passes. Because everybody loves a winner, right? Beside me, Bella made more notes on her legal pad. From the folder in her lap, she extracted a glossy hockey program.
"Have you seen this yet?" she asked. "They just came back from the printer."
"Nice,"
I said, because I knew she'd worked hard on it. She flipped it open to the roster where our smiling faces looked out at the camera, our uniforms still crisp and unbloodied.
You take a nice picture, Ricker, she sighed.
I laughed. And here I was just thinking how photoshopped those are. We all look like we've just come from having our teeth whitened. She pulled the page closer to her face.
What do you think of Orson's sideburns? It's a risky look, but I think he pulls it off.
No comment.
God, Rick, she heaved a sigh. That was a perfectly harmless question. I didn't ask if you wanted to do him.
Bella, I warned, dropping my voice. I'm really not joking about this. Even if I felt like admitting to you that facial hair doesn't really do it for me, it's not a conversation I can have. That's exactly what the homophobes are worried about, you know? That I'm staring at them and taking notes.
Maybe they need to lighten up, she whispered.
I don't think I can make them do that, I whispered back. She held my eyes for a long moment, and I saw understanding flicker through hers. But then her evil grin reappeared.
Seriously, you don't like facial hair? I love it, even when it chafes my inner thighs. Especially then.
With a groan, I closed my eyes, banging my head into the headrest. Thanks for that image, Bella. Of all the people on the bus to remind me how horny I was, who knew it would be a chick? Fuck my life. She giggled.
I just had the best idea.
I can't wait to hear it.
Just for fun, I'm going to tell everyone on the team that you don't like facial hair. By Christmas, they'll all be as hairy as Wolfman.
The laugh erupted from me before I could hold it in. Or you could try the reverse, just for kicks. Tell them I'm hot for facial hair, and by tomorrow they'll all be as clean-shaven as the Marine Corps. We laughed until the tears were leaking down Bella's face. What's so funny? A head popped up from the seat in front of us to ask, but it belonged to Groucho, a senior defenseman with the shaggiest beard on the team. Bella howled again, and Groucho began to frown. Time for chocolate, I said, digging into my bag. Because everyone responds to chocolate, I should probably buy it in bulk. The bus rolled on. We were heading to an invitational in Boston. We'd play one game tonight and another one tomorrow. With the program still open in her lap, Bella scribbled on the legal pad, occasionally crossing something out and grumbling.
What are you doing anyway? I asked. Hotel room assignments. It's like planning the seating at a wedding.
That got my attention. What are you going to do with me? You'll be my roommate, right?
I can't, she said, making a note on her page. The athletic department woman has to be with me. We're the only chicks.
Well, fuck. How about Hartley?
He asked me to put him with Frenchie so he can keep an eye on him. Apparently the kid doesn't like to leave his bong at home, and Hartley doesn't want anyone to get arrested.
Who then?
I'm working on it.
Under her breath, she counted all the names on the page. As I watched, she crossed off a name and switched it with another.
Okay, I think I'm going to put you in with Graham.
Whoa, I said, my heart dropping into my stomach. You can't do that. She looked up, and her expression was full of genuine surprise.
Why not?
I swallowed, trying to keep the panic off my face. That dude seriously does not like me. I'm not kidding. Big D would probably be happier to see me than Graham. Bella's eyes narrowed.
You did not just compare Graham to Big D.
I blinked back at her, having no idea what to say. It didn't matter that I knew the difference between Big D, who was just an all-around bigot and total asshole, and Graham, who hated me for a very special reason. We could not share a room.
Graham is just a big teddy bear, Bella went on. I wish everyone would just get off his case.
Two pink spots appeared on her cheekbones. If ever there was a moment for treading lightly, I had found it. Because I realized then that there were a couple of details that I'd missed. Though she claimed to be a free agent, Bella obviously carried some kind of torch for Graham. The flush on her face suggested that he was her favorite teddy bear, though she'd probably be shocked to learn that I'd snuggled him first. And also she was concerned about him, probably because he had been sucking wind at practice lately. What to do? I'm not on Graham's case, Bella, I said softly. But if you want him relaxed and ready to play, I'm telling you that you should give him a different roommate. Bella stuck her nose back into her work.
I'll take it under advisement, but rooms are tight, and you're wrong about him.
Fuck. Who knows why he doesn't like me? Maybe he thought I was a shitty player in high school. I lived in Michigan before I moved to Vermont. She looked up.
I noticed that in your bio. The Jesus Saves team, right?
Yeah, I chuckled. Cool t-shirt aside, the private Christian schools we'd attended were not the right place for me.
I asked Graham about that. He said he didn't remember you. Was it a big place?
I could only nod at her, because I needed a moment to inwardly choke on that. He said he didn't remember you. Gave me a fresh hit of pain to hear that out loud. She kept talking, oblivious.
It was a Christian school, huh? That must have been a lot of fun for the gay boy. I mean, if you already knew it then.
I laughed, but the sound was bitter to my own ears. Oh, I knew it all right, and at that school they preached it just like you read about. Even before Graham, when I was still in denial, they basically condemned me to hell on a daily basis. I hated that place. Vermont was so much better, because everybody there is a little bit weird.
So you were out in high school?
She clicked her pen and studied me with big green eyes. It was a fair question, but not easily answered. Straight people always assume that you're either in the closet or all the way out, but that's not really how it worked. You could be out for some people and hiding it from others. My family knew, and my closest friends, but not the hockey team. Bella chewed on the end of her pen.
Sports really is the final frontier, isn't it? Now there's a same-sex marriage in 17 states, but the NHL is 100% straight.
Sure it is.
Right?
She laughed. The bus rolled on and we sat in silence for a minute.
Don't put me with Graham, I said quietly.
She made an annoyed sound in her throat.
He's not a jerk, okay? The world is papered over with jerks, but Graham is not one of them.
That might even be true, but it didn't matter. If Bella put us in a hotel room, I could almost picture him leaping from the balcony. And it would be my fault in a way, because I still took the occasional opportunity to torture him with a knowing smile or a stare. How about this? I asked, hitting on the solution. Just run it by him first. That way I wouldn't offend Bella by harping on it. He could tell her himself. If he doesn't like the idea, tell Hartley I'll babysit Frenchie for him. I'd never heard either of our French-speaking teammates slander me, and faggot was the same word in English and in French.
Fine.
I looked out the window then, watching the world go by. I tried to think of hockey. Nothing but hockey.
Graham. By some miracle, I finally played a decent game that night in Boston. It was the bright lights and the sound of the crowd that woke me the hell up. Though I'd been stinking at practice, the chance to mow down a real live opponent shook the cobwebs off of me. I felt lighter on my feet than I had in weeks. Whenever the other guys had the puck, I was energy in motion. Mine, I chant to myself, poke-checking the puck out of their grasp. And if the guy didn't give it up, I forced the issue. My pads got a workout. By the time the game was over, I tossed every one of their offensive players onto the boards. It helped that the other team had looked shaky. There's nothing like an early goal to light up the squad. Hartley sank one in when the clock still read 15:55 in the first period. And it wasn't just me who was fired up. Our foot speed was good. Passes went where they were intended to go. Our confidence lasted all three periods for a 4-0 score on the game. Finally. It was nice to remember that I could play this game. Pitbull and Kesha were already singing their guts out by the time I made it into the locker room. Stripping off my sweaty pads, the exhaustion began to hit me. But it was the good kind. I stacked my gear as best as I could into a dodgy metal locker. The host school didn't have the fancy digs that our stadium had. Either that, or they'd saved it for themselves. Behind me, Bella suddenly slammed the heel of her boot onto something skittering across the floor. Gross, Big D said. Tell me that wasn't a roach. Save the white meat, I joked. There was no use getting too ornery about the surroundings. It would only make us sound like the elitist snobs that everyone expected from the Ivy League. This is the way I picture showers in prison, somebody else said, heading around the corner into the cave-like facility. And just like in prison, Big D put in, you could expect to be eye-fucked by those of us who like boys. There it was, the daily queer smear from Big D. And what did I do about it? Look away, neutral face, repeat. My whole life was a cowardly exercise in raising my deflector shields. I'm sure you meant me, Bella quipped, because deflection was not her style. I like boys, a lot. And let me just throw it out there that I won't be eye-fucking you while you shower. You don't have to, darling, you've had the real deal. I thought Bella had lost that round, but she lifted one shoulder and proceeded to flatten him, It's good that you remind me of that from time to time. Since it only lasted 10 seconds, I tend to forget. As she so often does, Bella cracked my deflector shields wide open, and I laughed out loud. Facing the corner, I took a shower that lasted about 3.5 seconds. People like Big D have it wrong. They think that the gay guy is going to be the one who's slowly soaping up his dick, watching you shampoo. But that's not how it works in a varsity locker room on planet Earth. The gay guy is the one who discreetly goes about his business, showering quickly and then getting the hell out of there. He puts his underwear on when his skin is still damp, even though it will stick up his ass crack for the rest of the night. He isn't staring at you, and he'd rather eat broken glass than sport some wood in the locker room. That way, when his life explodes in his face because he forgot to raise the deflector shields one time out of a million, he won't be able to accuse him of being creepy. You'll look back on your years of showering together and be unable to remember a single thing he said or did when you were naked. Because he is invisible. At least he tries to be. His computer's browser history is deleted every time he steps away from the machine. His clothes are nondescript. His face is carefully blank. Honestly, it's exhausting. As I jammed my feet into my socks, I would have bet cash money that Ricker was setting a similar land speed record across the room for how quickly a guy could get out of this claustrophobic hellhole. Though I couldn't even settle up that bet with a glance in his direction, because that would violate more than one of the codes I kept. Number one, never look around the locker room. And number two, never, ever look at Ricker.
Hey, Graham, I have a favor to ask you.
Bella stood beside me, her hair going frizzy from the shower steam. Ventilation hadn't been invented when this place was built. Yeah? Lay it on me.
I'm going to give out the hotel room assignments now, and I want to put Ricker with you.
The only blessing was that my face was inside my locker when she said it. Because even with years of practice, no deflector shield was strong enough to withstand that kind of shock. I mean, holy shit. I needed to give her some kind of reply, but that's pretty hard to do when your heart has just crawled up your throat and into your mouth.
You're okay with that, right?
She prodded.
I never took you for the homophobic type.
Right, I mumbled, because I was going out of my fucking mind just then. She said she didn't take me for the homophobic type. That was dead wrong. I was the most homophobic person alive. Because homophobic means afraid of homosexuals. And I was pant-shitting terrified of myself.
Graham, look at me.
Sorry, honey, no can do. Just a second. I said, cover me. This conversation had just reminded me of something important. The flask in my hockey bag. With the locker door blocking one side and Bella the other, I yanked it out and screwed off the cap. With my head in the locker, I took a deep pull. Even as I swallowed, Bella yanked the flask out of my hand.
Graham!
She hissed.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Nothing. I hissed right back. Now give me that.
Not a chance.
Her fingers actually shook with fury as she tightened down the top. Then she dropped my flask into a pocket of her bag.
You skated really well tonight, she said, her voice tight, and I was relieved to see it because you are freaking me out lately.
I managed to meet her eyes then, but it wasn't easy. Bella was pretty good at reading people. I felt her laser gaze searching my face for clues. She leaned in close, although nobody was going to hear us over the thump of the music and the slamming of locker doors.
Why are you drinking so much, Graham?
She asked.
What's the matter?
I just shrugged because that's all I had to say on the subject.
Fine, she said, her face hardening. Be a jackass to me if you must.
She pushed a hotel key envelope into my hand.
But don't be a jackass to him.
God, how I hated hearing her say that. It killed me every time I saw Bella and Ricker talking together. Not only did I fear for my own privacy, I hated the feeling that I was losing my best friend.
To him.
My flask, I said, hating the sound of my own voice.
You can have it back tomorrow after the game.
She marched off then. Hell. There's nothing to do then except to go off to find some dinner, and if there really was a god in heaven like they taught us at my homophobic hellhole of a high school, more alcohol.
Ricker. I ate a late dinner of crab cakes and lobster roll at some fish place that Coach herded us to, and then everyone walked back toward the hotel in plenty of time for our 10 o'clock curfew. But I dawdled, walking down the side streets, buying myself an ice cream cone in a drowsy little cafe. I liked cities. I liked their busy sidewalks and their anonymity. Where I grew up in western Michigan, there was only a taste of the city life. Most everyone favored the dull suburbs. When I moved to Vermont for 10th grade, I thought I'd hate the rural atmosphere, but it actually grew on me, because it was more honest than the aggressively tended lawns of my youth. There were ragged meadows with cows munching them. There were miles of pine forest and the outline of the Green Mountains everywhere you looked. Still, I preferred the city, especially a good old one. My ex-boyfriend and I used to drive 90 minutes from Burlington into Montreal, where the drinking age, and therefore the clubbing age, was only 18. We had a blast finding all the gay bars and trying them out. A group of college kids passed me on the sidewalk, laughing together. There was no denying that I was lonely and letting it get to me tonight. At 10 o'clock on the dot, I walked into the hotel carrying my duffel bag and a heavy helping of dread. When Bella had given me my key card, she'd done it with a frown. "If you see anybody drinking before the game tomorrow, will you tell me?"
Sure.
You'd have to be a pretty big idiot to want to drink before getting onto the ice with a bunch of guys who were trying to squish you like a bug. She didn't say anything about my rooming situation, so I was pretty sure who I'd find, unless he'd fled somehow. Upstairs, the door to room 312 opened with a mechanical click, and I pushed inside. It was so dark in there that I assumed I was alone. In fact, when my eyes adjusted to the dimness, it startled the crap out of me to see Graham sitting at the little table near the window, his chin parked on his folded hands. I dropped my bag on the floor and fumbled for one of the bedside lamps. Even when I clicked it on, making a circle of yellow light on the rug, he didn't move. "Hola, Miguel," I said, my voice low. There was no response. Seriously, even if I could understand his reluctance to speak to me in a room full of people, ignoring me right now was asinine. He made me feel like I was starring in that movie where Bruce Willis is dead but doesn't know it. I should have just headed into the bathroom to brush my teeth and pretend like it didn't matter. But it did matter. And during the next 10 seconds, my anger swelled. I was suddenly livid with the sound of blood pounding in my ears. Because no matter how much you might want to pretend a person doesn't exist, you can't do that. Especially if that person is your teammate. Especially if that person used to be your best friend. Crossing the room, I stood over him. He didn't move, not a muscle. So I raised a hand, hovering my palm over his forehead, where all that soft blonde hair framed his face. I used to run my fingers through it. But I didn't do that now. Instead, I used the heel of my hand to give his head a violent backward shove. He moved then, because I really didn't give him a choice. His neck snapped back until it collided with the wall, and his wild eyes met mine. But he didn't say a word. And it made me so fucking crazy that I was close to losing it. I didn't even plan to, but I made a fist. "Hit me," he whispered then. And the expression on his face held so much pain that you might think I'd already socked him. "Fuck you," I spat. I wanted to hit him. I really did. The small flicker of sanity that I still possessed decided to surface, reminding me that I would only get in trouble for it. He probably wanted me to deck him so I'd get kicked off the team. Not worth it. Not worth it. Just breathe. I didn't punch him. Instead, I reached up like a punk-ass kid and flicked him on the forehead. That's proof right there that I was, at that moment, cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Hell, just then I wished he'd hit me, because I'd have a good reason to feel this insane. But that didn't happen either. Instead, Graham reached up and caught my retreating hand by the wrist. Awkwardly, he pulled the back of my hand tight against his forehead, trapping it there. He closed his eyes and heaved out a breath that had the weight of the world in it. Stunned, I was frozen in place for a split second. My brain went temporarily offline at the feeling of Graham's hand closing around mine. For a long second, I could only manage to take in the warmth of his palm and the trembling fingers. Freaked out now, I jerked my hand out of his grip, taking 2 steps backward. My knees hit the back of one of the beds, bringing me down to a seated position. "Time out," my consciousness pleaded, trying to catch up. And all the while, my heart slammed into my ribs. "I'm sorry," he said hoarsely. I cleared my throat. "For what?" He gave his head a single violent shake. For everything. The whole friggin' thing. It's way too late to say it, but I am... sorry, I mean.
Whoa.
More silence for me, while I waited for the world to stop tilting. Okay, I said, taking in some extra oxygen. I'm sorry I ran. He put his head down in his hands, and I could see his chest rise and fall with each breath that sawed in and out. Well, fuck, a part of me had been waiting 5 years to hear this, but now that he'd actually apologized, I found that it hurt too much to talk about it. Thanks for the sentiment, but I ran too, dude. It's just that you ran faster. See, running away wasn't Graham's crime. Running from thugs who are yelling, sick little faggots, is not a bad call. The real damage was that Graham never spoke to me again. As far as I knew, he never told a soul that he was there that day I was attacked. Although if I'd been thinking straight in that ER, I probably wouldn't have told anyone either. But they gave me painkillers at the hospital, so my parents were treated to a sloppy version of events. It was enough to freak them out for good. By the time the police arrived to ask me why the thugs had beat me up, I said what my parents told me to say. They wanted my wallet. The cops didn't even bother to ask why I still had it. I'm pretty sure I wasn't fooling anyone. My parents' solution was to get me the hell out of Dodge. They thought if they sent me away from Graham, I wouldn't stay gay. Vermont will be good for you, they said when they brought up my grandmother. You'll go there to heal. Permanently, though. Yeah, thinking about this was really not my favorite activity. Graham was still slumped into his hands at the table. He looked like a man who was waiting to be executed for his crimes. And even though I'd been mad at him for 5 years, I didn't want to talk about it anymore. Okay, Graham, here's what we're going to do. I waited until he picked his head up to look at me. It was the first time he'd made eye contact on purpose since I'd come to Harkness. I'm going to stop torturing you, I said. No more... I didn't even know what to call the taunting I'd done to him. I won't bring it up again.
I deserved it, he said.
Hearing him say that really took me back, because that was a classic Graham response. He had that still waters run deep thing going on. Whenever we fought about Xbox, or whether one of us had slighted the other one, whatever 15-year-olds argued about, he felt it deeply. Fine, I said. So this is how you're going to make it better. You're going to stop looking like you want to puke every time I walk through a door. I didn't come to Harkness to wreck your life, I came to play hockey. There's a lot of guys in that room who'd like to toss me out on my ass, so you can try to stop being one of them. His face was as somber as I'd ever seen it.
Okay, he said finally.
I mean it. Let's forget every fucked up thing that happened. We won't talk about that shit ever again, but in the locker room, we have a truce.
All right, he said slowly.
I'm not expecting you to stick up for me, I added quickly. Just chill the fuck out, can you do that?
His nod was slow, but it was serious. There was a knock on the door.
Ricker? Graham?
Bella's voice called.
Yeah,
we both replied at once. She twisted the lever.
It's locked, morons.
Graham got up quickly, his long legs eating up the distance to the door in just a few strides. When he opened the door, Bella came in, her glance traveling the quiet room as if taking our temperature.
What you doing? She asked.
Heroin, Graham said, with a side of meth and a vodka chaser. For the first time in over 5 years, I laughed at one of Graham's dry jokes. Bella looked from him to me and back again.
Okay then, I was just checking to make sure that everyone